Commission meeting, September 24th, 2020.
And then we go into our regular meeting where we, I can't think of it, approve resolutions, take action. Thank you, Lance. Take action. So there are public comment portions, and I'll explain. The first one is based on things that we're going to vote on. And then there is a final public comment portion at the end of the actual meeting where we vote. So, all right, ready to get started? The first thing on our list is a presentation from... I did read it. I read it.
Did you?
Uh-huh.
I didn't hear it. I'm sorry.
That's okay. You're making me crazier than I am now. The first is a presentation from Jennifer Hansen. Sober Living Homes is, I don't see her physically, so...
She's up there and left, yep.
Oh, okay. So Jen, you're, she's up there, correct?
Yep.
Okay.
She just got unmuted.
Hi, Jen.
How you doing? My name is Jennifer Hansen. So let me just... So I just wanted to come on here and, I know there's been a lot of discussion about sober living houses, and I wanted to kind of just educate everyone a little bit on what we do and, what we're allowed to do. First of all, I just wanted to kind of give everyone a brief, education about the law surrounding sober living houses. So, there's something called the Federal Fair Housing Act and the Americans with Disabilities Act. And the definition of disability is a person, has a disability under the ADA if they have a physical or mental impairment that substantially limits one or more major life activities. Example, someone with bipolar, diabetes, or addiction to alcohol. Two, a history of an impairment that substantially limited one or more major life activities. Someone who has a history of cancer or someone in recovery from illegal use of drugs. So that is the definition of disability from the government, and, people that are recovering from addiction are disabled people under that definition. Under the Federal Fair Housing Act, there's a lot of rulings out there on what municipalities can do. So I'm just going to read you a short thing about the Federal Fair Housing Act. It prohibits a broad range of housing practices that discriminate against individuals based on race, color, religion, sex, disability, familial status, or national origin. Established by the supremacy clause of the U.S. Constitution, federal laws such as the Federal Fair Housing Act take precedence over conflicting state and local laws. The Federal Housing Act thus prohibits state and local land use and zoning laws, policies, and practices that discriminate based on a characteristic protected under the Act.
Arrogant.
Excuse me?
No, I muted that person trying to speak.
Okay. Examples of state and local land use and zoning laws or practices that may violate the Act include prohibiting or restricting the development of housing based on the belief that the residents will be members of a particular protected class, such as disability, for example. Placing a moratorium on the development of multifamily housing because of concerns that the residents will include members of that particular protected class. Imposing restrictions or additional conditions on group housing for persons with disabilities that are not imposed on families or other groups of unrelated individuals. By, for example, requiring an occupancy permit for persons with disabilities to live in a single-family home while not requiring a permit for other residents of single-family homes. including restrictions on housing because of alleged public safety concerns that are based on stereotypes about the residents or anticipated residents' membership in a protected class. For example, requiring the proposed development to provide additional security members based on a belief that persons of a particular protected class are more likely to engage in criminal activity. Enforcing otherwise neutral laws or policies differently because of a resident's protected characteristics. By, for example, citing individuals who are members of a particular protected class code requirements for property upkeep, while there is not citing other residents for similar violations. Refusing to provide reasonable accommodations to land use or zoning policies when such accommodations may be necessary to allow persons with disabilities to have an equal opportunity and enjoy the use of housing. So, I mean, that's pretty much self-explanatory, and it really does protect, you know, the houses that we have, and the other sober living houses in the area. I wanted to clarify the record. I know that when Commissioner Landgraf spoke, I think it made it kind of sound like we had 25 houses in Venner, and that is not the case. We have 5 houses in Venner. And what I'm trying to do with some of those houses is some of them we rent, and a couple of them we own, and I'm trying to get out of the rental situations and purchase houses that we can own, because what happens is when there's maintenance issues and I have to deal with the landlord, a lot of times the landlords don't want to keep the houses up to the standard that I like them kept. So I just found that it's better for us to own the houses. That way, if we need to do maintenance on them, we can fix them, and you know, we're not investing in a house that we don't own. And I also had met with Commissioner Landgraf previously and brought him over to one of our houses and introduced him to some of the people that live there, and at that time kind of said one of the problems that you guys were having in Venner was the cluster of, you know, a few houses next to each other, and I understand that, and I am trying to address that situation. I'm trying to move 2 of those houses to other locations, but that's a process of doing that. So first we have to acquire the other house. In the case of the one house that we acquired on Newark Avenue, that house had squatters living in it. They were stealing electric. There was no running water. There was kitty litter boxes with human feces in it, with people living in there. The smell coming out of that house, like that house had been like that. It took me 9 months to purchase that house. So going back, and there wasn't supposed to be anyone living there. So when we went in with the realtor, we discovered the 2 people that were living there. You know, in totally unlivable conditions. So, you know, to take that house, I mean, we purchased that house, it had an oil tank leak, we had to do a complete cleanup of the oil tank, which had leaked a lot. We had to take like 250 tons of dirt out there, I mean, it was a lot. And now we're making that into like a brand new house. And it's going to be a beautiful house there.
Jen, can I ask you a question?
Yeah, it's
me. Why did he mute me again? Oh, can you hear me, Jen?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, okay. Not to interrupt you, but I think maybe would be good information for the people here in the chambers as well as on the Zoom call. Can you just go over the type of setup that goes on in the recovery, in the sober living homes? What step the person is, I think people are, they're not educated in the field if it hasn't walked through their door, so they think, you know, they use certain words, and they think the person just, like, stopped taking whatever the drug of choice was a day ago. So I think maybe if you would explain the process of the road to recovery and the people that are going into your homes, where they are. They're not day one of no substance abuse. Also, the setup of your house. Do you have a live-in person that's there supervising? Things like that, I think, because based on the ADA and Federal Fair Housing Act, you know, it's obvious that legally, you know, like you said, I mean, we don't want to have clusters in Ventnor, but, you know, the residents, and they feel their property values go down, and we, the commission, understand it. But at the same time, I think it's important that you perhaps educate a little bit of the scenario of when these people come into one of your homes, where they are in the steps of recovery, and what kind of setup the home has, supervision-wise and things like that. Think you can do a brief...
I was getting ready to go through some of the differences between, like, a self-run recovery house and one of our houses. So there's basically two different kinds of recovery houses. One is a self-run house, kind of like the Oxford House model. And basically that's democratically run. There's no one in there that is really in charge. They are all kind of, they all vote on everything. And so they kind of, it can be good if you have a good group of people, but some of them, you know, if one person's using in there and then another person is friends with that person, they might not, you know, want to ask them for a drug test, because it's like your friends that you're living with that you then have to say, can I drug test you, and, you know, kick you out of the house. So sometimes they work out really well, and sometimes they don't. But our houses are a little bit different. They, we don't have live-in house managers, because we don't really believe that that's, we believe that kind of that gives you that same scenario, is that when you're living with the people that you're managing, you're getting a little bit loose, and there can be favoritism and things like that. So we have lived-out house managers that come in our level three houses, they come in, or our level two houses, they come in 40 hours a week. They take people to do things like help get their driver's license back, go to court dates if they have any, supervised visits for children, get their social security cards, go to the doctor. So all kinds of things like that our house managers help with. They're also, they all have to call in every night at their curfew. They have to be in at 11 o'clock on weekdays, 1 o'clock on weekends, and they have to stay clean. So they all get drug testers, and if they fail their drug test, then they have to leave, and we make sure they get to a safe place. And sometimes that's their parents' house, sometimes the mission, sometimes, you know. But we do make sure they, you know, sometimes it's back to a treatment center or something. But when they come into our houses, they are either have already been detoxed and have gone to some residential treatment. We have different levels of housing. We have like a level three house where we have 24/7 supervision, and the people that live there are still in daytime treatment. So they go to treatment from like 8:30 in the morning till 3:30 in the afternoon, and then they come home, and they go out to dinner. I mean, they usually go out to the gym, they come home and eat dinner, and then they go out to a meeting, you know, 12-step recovery meeting at night, and so it's a pretty full day. And there's one van that takes all the people together to everywhere that they're going, and they have 24/7 supervision. They stay in that house for about 30 days, and then they move into a level 2 house where they can stay for up to 18 months. So if you can kind of see, like, what happens and why there's demand for more houses, it's because the people that get into the level 2 houses, they stay for a long time. They sometimes stay for anywhere from 6 months to 18 months. And so we haven't ever wanted to not allow them to stay that long, because we feel like that's how long it really takes for someone to recover successfully. So we have had to open more houses to, you know, substantiate the need for, you know, and it's not just in this neighborhood. We have a couple of houses in Atchison, we have a house in Summers Point. There are honestly sober living houses all over the state, all over the country. So it's not happening in just Bentner, it's happening everywhere, because honestly the disease of addiction is so bad, you know? I mean, last year there was about 120,000 and deaths from heroin last year. So if you look at, you know, this pandemic that we just went through and think about how many people died from that, you know, overdosing wasn't far behind. And it stayed on that way for a long time. So, you know, we're not trying to tax the neighborhood. We're trying to be really good neighbors. We're trying to listen to people's concerns and see if there's anything we can do to make it better. Because honestly, all the people living in our houses really trying to put their lives back together. And they are. They're successful at it. So it's working. We're taking people that were a detriment to society, that weren't paying taxes, and we're turning them into, like, really good tax-paying citizens that are an asset to society. So, you know, I don't know, it sometimes doesn't affect people until it's a member of their family, but, you know, when it is a member of their family, a lot of them call me, and a lot of them ask for help for their family. Because they know that we run a really good program. And they know that a lot of, like they know that the houses are nice and that they don't want their loved ones going to live in squalor, you know? I mean, there are, and we want to give people their sense of self-worth, to have them living in a nice place. So, you know, I'm seeing some of the list of questions. I don't know if you want me to go through and kind of address these things.
If there's some of them you can, Jennifer, that would be great.
Do they pay real estate taxes? So the ones that, if it's owned by a nonprofit, they shouldn't. But some of them we do. And if the houses are rented, then yes, they do. The car situation, normally we have about 5 people per house that have a car. We rarely have over that. Normally we have about 11 people in our houses. All of our houses are licensed from the Department of Community Affairs, as well as from NJAR, which is the New Jersey Alliance of Recovery Residences. So we have to get re-credited every year for that certification, and
it's a lot of repetitive questions, so you've answered some of them already.
Yeah, I'm trying to read through and see.
You didn't pay a service fee.
Well, one of the reasons that, we don't put these houses out in the middle of nowhere is because a lot of the people don't have them. And they can't get to work. And so we've tried to keep them really close to businesses where they can easily get to work and get to meetings and ride their bikes and public transportation. So, there have been some houses that have been like out in Egg Harbor Township, and a lot of the people can't make it out there because they can't get around. So that's one of the reasons why we keep it in.
So one of the comments I saw, Mayor, if I can answer that.
Go ahead.
So there was a comment about the five houses. Yes, Hanson has five houses. There are at least 20 others that are operated by other people in our city. There's some discrepancy with that number. Jennifer has a different number. DCA has a different number. So we're in the process of verifying that number right now. But that was the number that we had in our code office as of last February, or this past February. So we're going with that number now, but Hanson Foundation just has the five. That I should have made more clear 2 weeks ago at our meeting, but they are. I got to stop talking to that thing. I got to talk to people that are here. You get so entranced in working with Zoom. So that's our number now, but we are verifying that with both the DCA and our code office.
I can't about half of that. As far as AC having constraints on how far parking must be, that's unlawful. They actually,
it's in litigation.
An unlawful ordinance, and we're in court for that right now. So, yes.
So, Jen, how do I unmute myself?
Did you have a question?
Yeah, well, no, actually, I think the biggest concern, if I'm not mistaken, by just saying things and hearing things, and Commissioner Landgraf and Kriebel, they can jump in, is, we understand the laws, and we understand you have the freedom to purchase homes wherever, but the big concern is that there's clusters in one neighborhood. That it is affecting the, because people don't understand everything you just said. I saw some comments, and it's very clear that there's people that really, they didn't hear you, they didn't want to hear you, whatever the case may be. So I think that is really the crux of it, is that people don't want two or three homes on their block, or three homes in a so five block radius. Other than ask you, if you look in Ventnor to, or other cities to spread it out, because that is really, I think, the biggest concern, is that there's too many on one street or in one neighborhood. I could be wrong, but that's what I've been hearing for probably about a year. I think the last time, I think you and I once had a conversation on the phone, and I said that to you. So. And maybe
we are rectifying that, but there are four houses very close together. Three are right next to each other, and one is across the street.
Right.
So two of those are moving.
Are they all yours? Yeah, the three on the one block. I think if it's almost, you meet, it's like meeting halfway. If you try to not have them three in a block, even if, I mean, I know your mission, and I understand the need for it, but the big picture of Ventnor and the residents and all the taxpayers, you know, I mean, and everyone has the right to their opinion on how they feel. So if they look at people in recovery in a negative light, we can't change that. All I'm asking is if you could try not to have so many in one spot, because it is affecting the people that, and especially on the beach blocks, and people that are paying taxes, they probably would not want any of them in there, but under the ADA and the Federal Fair Housing Act, there's only so much that what they want they can get. But I think if you really make a effort, you and the foundation, not to purchase or rent so many together in the city of Ventnor, we're not that big, you know. This is it's
2 square miles.
Two square miles. We're not New York City. So I think that, and I think even if that happens, I think people would probably just look at the mission of the Hanson Foundation in a different light, because right now it's skewed because they just see three houses with 10 people in each house, and you know, they're in recovery, and most people in recovery, they'll still smoke cigarettes, and they, you know, they smell it outside, and whatever the case may be. So I really think, as the mayor, commissioners can jump in, I think that is something that I would like to ask on behalf of the citizens that live in the areas when there's a cluster of these sober living homes. It's not pleasable to them. And, you know, you and I mean, we can understand, and like you said, unless it's a family member, but God bless them, they haven't had to walk down that road. But they also deserve to have the environment in which they originally bought their home, and the taxes they pay, basically preserved. So I think you know what I'm saying.
So I think that's what Jennifer's trying to do.
Right.
We're hearing that. So right. We, you know, the one house that we totally renovated on Newark, one of those houses from Austin is moving there. And then we have another house that we are supposed to, you know, trying to finalize, that we're moving another one of them. So we are trying to spread them out, and you know, I'm doing the best I can. We also have, you know, we respond to complaints of the neighbors too. I mean, if we get any, we don't have many complaints, but you know, and then like someone behind us asked us if we could, you know, not have people out on the back porch smoking, and maybe they go out on the front porch because there's a big building across the street, and you know, so we did that, and we cleared out the garages there so that they can go in there and smoke. We don't allow smoking in the household, so I don't think it's safe. I don't think, you know, it's safe for fire purposes. People keep asking me why I let them smoke in the houses, but so we did clear out a couple garages, and we're trying to do what we can, and we try to, you know, ask the people that are living in there not to all have everyone go out at one time, which they, you know, sometimes like to do. So I understand some of the problems, and we are doing the best that we can to address them, if any.
Tim.
Tim, you got to mute the people coming in. There'll be a public portion once we get through our agenda. Yep.
I would just agree with what you'd said, Mayor. I think it's a very balanced approach that we're looking for to address the clustering, and maybe for the sake of Ventnor's sake, the total number. But that's a different conversation. I think that the predicament is that there's so little regulation that there's a lot of unanswered questions for right. For us and our abilities as well. But clustering is the main question here. It's a, it affects the character of a block when there's multiple homes on a block that have more residents in there than is typical, and these types of activities. And are they regulated? We're not condoning or proposing any unfair or prejudiced enforcement of any laws. That's not what we're here for.
Right.
Zero. But we are concerned about the character of our streets and the number in total, and we're keeping a close eye as what the classifications are that are missing for these types of homes. What are we responsible for our taxpayers as a whole?
You're welcome. I think the whole idea why I said brought up the cluster in Jen, I mean, you know, we're not far from Stockton University. I mean, I think the residents would feel the same way if beach block homes were rented for fraternities. I mean, imagine that. So, I mean, that's like having three fraternity houses on a beach block. I mean, so it's just like I said, the people that bought the homes there, that have lived there for a long time, the whole character of the area changes. So, and that's personal opinions and perceptions, and it is what it is, but I think the clustering, I think if that gets resolved, it will resolve part of this. I'll put it that way. Right. Now, it's not that I want to, I don't want to cut everyone off, but based on things that I'm seeing and I'm reading, and we have a meeting, it's up to the commissioners, but it looks, we could probably be here till 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, I think one thing, and I'll say this, and we can end kind of the presentation on this. And Jennifer, thank you. I mean, we had a really good conversation the other day. I had a good conversation with Assemblyman Mazzio yesterday, discussing the bill that you had proposed, or that they had proposed, that would require licensing of all sober living facilities, which you guys have. You have that certification. A lot of the other ones don't. And that may be a mechanism on how we control the number of them, because a lot of the Oxford-style homes do not have a certification.
Right.
So what the Hanson Foundation has done is follow that national model. That allows, and Commissioner Kriebel did some research and actually found a town out in California that says if you don't have this license, then you cannot locate in our town. That may be a way to handle it, where we have, when we do get facilities in our community, they're like the Hanson Group, where they do monitor, they have that manager. And I apologize, I thought the person was there 24 hours a day. It's not a live-in manager, Jennifer, right?
No.
Okay.
We have resident peers.
Right.
Who are, you know, like leads, but staff is always on call 24/7, and
okay. So I, you know, what, and you had offered this, and I want to put this out there, and we can facilitate it. That Jennifer had offered to meet with residents in each of these neighborhoods and sit down and talk to everybody, get more information from her, get some more. Maybe we do a town hall on this, where there is a way to get, you know, I think the public needs to be a little bit more informed, because some of the comments are just outright against what she just explained. So,
right.
Some of that needs to get out in a different forum. Maybe it's group meetings. I'm not sure how we do that in COVID. I mean, we're sitting 8 feet apart, and, you know, it's hard to have.
I mean, I'm at one of the houses right now, and I have a couple other residents here that, you know, would like to say something briefly. I just would like people to see, you know, the kind of residents that we have living in the houses. I mean, you know, people talk about us like we are criminals and, you know, child molesters, and I don't know what people think, but I'm a recovering addict. We're human, you know, and this is part of our human family. Like, we need to all take care of each other. And for people to put such a stigma on, you know, people that are sick, you know, and they need help getting better. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to help people get better so that they can live their lives. And, if you want them to wait until the comment section, that's fine, but I would like to,
if they just want to say something real quick, you okay?
That's fine.
With that,
yeah, that's fine, Jen.
All right, sure.
make it brief, but I went into treatment in February, and during that time, COVID hit. I live in Bergen County, work in New York City. So the thought of going back there did not appeal to me, and I don't think that it would help with my sobriety. So I decided to stay. I never would have thought I would go into a sober living house, and it's the best decision that I ever made. Everyone is so supportive here. And I started off in F Beacon, and I was there for a few months. You have to be in sober living for a certain period of time before you can move into the Dorset House. It's called the Stack Out House. So I moved into the Dorset House about a month ago, and I truly believe that I would not have stayed sober if I went back to living county and back to the fall. I didn't have a career because of working in New York City. And I think what maybe some people fail to realize or understand is that we are a huge part of this community. We are your waiters and waitresses. We mow your lawns. We are nurses. We are pharmacists. We take care of your children. We educate your children. We are teachers. I mean, we have so many different walks of life here. And, you know, we spend a lot of money in this community. And with winter coming, it's quiet here. So, you know, the fact that we are a big part of the spending, I mean, we do. We shop here. We eat out here. I just really don't think that you have a full understanding of what these houses do for us. Truth be told, 10 years ago, somebody said they were putting up a sober living home next to my home, I probably wouldn't have even thought about it. But now I have a much different understanding, and this affects everyone. I would venture to say most of the people that are commenting either have someone in their life or themselves who be in public, and it touches everyone. And I just wish that everyone would understand that. So, it is a change.
Thank you.
Thanks, Cheryl.
Thank you.
How's it going, guys? My name is Ryan Dietrich, and I'm a resident over at 105. And I also work in Margate at Home Legacy Value and UPS Store, and managing UPS Store. I know you know personally, you talked the other day. You know, some of the things that are actually being said about these solar houses, you know, we do try very hard, like living on the beach block, we try to maintain like the atmosphere around it, like cleaning up after like everybody out there, throwing cigarettes, all that stuff, we clean up all that stuff. The garbage on the side of the houses, try to maintain everything we can. There is people that come there drunk, you know, walking down the block, going to the beach, and that's not on us. But we still clean up after them because that's who we are. You know what I mean? This program, and Jen Hanson and Terry, you know, they brought me in a year and a half ago when I had nothing. A year and a half ago, I was homeless, living in my car. And now, like, I'm running a UPS store in my family-owned business in Martin, a very, you know, well-known family business in Martin. And I'm sure so many people, even on this Zoom meeting, know me, just from coming into that store. And, you know, she touched on, or actually, I believe Jen touched on being like a stigma, and addicts being a name and everything like this. Like, I'm sure nobody in that area at all would walk in and point me out like, oh, he's an addict. Not at all. Because not all of us are like that. You know what I mean? Like, we do, we bring a lot to this community. I'm so, so thankful for Jen and this environment and giving me the opportunity to have a job, you know, to be a dad. I'm a dad now, to a one-year-old son. Like, I never would have got this. I'd probably still live at home as four dead. And I just got to say, it's an honor to be here. So, I just hope you guys can give us all a shot.
Thank you. Bless you.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thanks, Ryan. Good to see you.
Thanks, Jen. Commissioners, I need a few minutes.
Okay, we're going to, well, you got the gavel.
Yes, Dan, if you want, you could stay on. If not, that's up to you. We've got a lot to go through, but I'm going to take a five-minute break. Motion to take a five-minute break.
Motion to recess for 5 minutes.
Second?
Second the motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Recess 5 minutes, please. Wait a second.
Second the motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, meeting resumed. Okay. We don't have any department head reports tonight, correct?
Nope.
Okay. And no capital?
Yes, we do. Yeah, we do. Yes, we do.
Oh, we do? Well, that's why you're here. I thought you were here for something else. Okay, we have our auditor, Leon Costella, who is going to talk about our capital.
Thank you, Leon. Mm-hmm.
Ray, do you want mine? You can have it. Do you want mine? I can listen.
You sure?
Yeah.
I didn't.
Go ahead.
It's numbers. She hasn't memorized already. Who are you kidding?
Is this on or off?
I think it's on.
Green should be on.
PhD.
It's on. Okay. Yeah. You're good.
Okay. Thank you. So the Al had asked me to prepare some information for you on where you stand capital-wise. And it would be better if you had this.
Okay.
Okay.
But you're not allowed to have one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So what?
Want to share?
You've seen this before,
yes,
in other meetings when we've been planning stuff. And for the last 3.5 years, you've had an aggressive capital program that you needed badly. You've done many ordinances. You've done a lot of projects. We have the school thing that we did before, which I'll go over also. But this is really focusing on where do you stand with your capital right now. There's several columns that show you your existing debt that you have right now, what's out there. The CDL bomb that was dropped on us is in the purple. And I got two sales scheduled, one for $9 million in 2023 and one for $17 million for 2025. And what this does, it does not generate any more than a penny in any 1 year in any place along the way. And even some of this will be mitigated by other things that we do that we don't know exactly what they'll be yet, but we will get premiums on bond sales that will go to offset some of this. So this is, and again, the CDL is a 3-cent bomb that got dropped on us for the next 4 years.
Just explain briefly what that is.
Since we have so many people joining us tonight, which is a
okay,
which is a pleasure and a rarity, maybe you can let everybody know what was dropped on us when we got came into office.
After Hurricane Sandy, the city took a $5 million loan that was theoretically going to be forgiven. And
what year was, and that was in
13 and 14 is when you drew the money down. Yeah. So this money was drawn down by the city, all $5 million. And when it came time, when FEMA came in and investigated what you did, they said that $2.2 million of it you didn't spend for what you should have spent for. Not you, none of you were here at the time.
Right.
But the money wasn't spent what was supposed to be spent for. So you had to pay it back. And we've tried everything we could to not pay it back, and it didn't work. So we had to pay it back. It's got to be paid back in 5 years, and we have 4 payments left on it. Our plan was not to have this in our budget when you started 4.5 years ago now.
Right.
So this is a added item that was not in the in the pipeline, but after all of the probably 2.5 years worth of battling with them, this is what the result was. So we are paying that back. We went to the state and we applied for what's called a non-conforming maturity schedule for our 19 sale to smooth this out so we wouldn't have all the hit in 1 year.
It would have hit. $2.2 million would have been hit, and all the taxpayers would have had a huge
So we got that spread out to, you know, less than a penny per year is what we're working on right now. So that was something that was not anticipated when you took office and when we did other capital projects. So combined, there's $26 million worth of room in the next 4 years for bonding aspects. Al had a list of about $7 million worth of projects I think you're going to...
Right. The list I gave you was previous.
Right. Right. So the point was, can that be done and still fit within our plan? And the answer is yes.
Okay.
And what I've done is I've showed you, you know, the next page There's a $9 million maturity schedule at 2% right now. No bond sales are over 1%. It's unbelievable what the rates are right now. So I use 2% to be conservative. Then in 2025, the $17 million sale and what that would result in. And I also put in here a 20-year issue for what that would reflect. And the difference is going to be dramatic if we go 20 years, because the firehouse will qualify for 20 years worth of funding. So that we may elect to do depending on where rates are. But when I give you something, it's usually the worst case scenario, and it usually gets better from what I show you.
You learn that.
So I think we're fine with what we're doing right now. And the last two pages are just simply copies of the budgets, just to show you that the numbers that I'm using for comparison are accurate.
So you basically push back the first bond sale until after the CDL is satisfied.
Yes, I did. Exactly.
Some more concise words. So we're getting the effect spread of the CDL spread out, and we're not incurring any more until after.
Right, and then we lose that payment, and we start back on our own program.
And they're virtually the same.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, one more thing that. Any more questions on that?
No,
here,
I'm good.
Here.
This is the school issue that we tackled 3 years ago. And the column I want you to look at is the yearly change column. Even with the $9.4 million school bond that we did, we're going to have tax decreases every year for the next 15 years, pretty much. You can see $34,189, $261. And what I would do is, when we come to actually do this, I'll drop some of that $261 down into the next two to make them go lower, and so on.
And maybe just briefly, since we, like I said, have a large crowd, I mean, I know when the budget was submitted to we, the commission, the school had $1.8 million of capital improvements in their budget.
Yes.
Which was...
You removed most of it.
It was absurd because to have the taxpayers pay taxes on that money.
In 1 year.
In 1 year on capital improvements that have a life of 15, 20, 30 years. We then said, no, take it out of your budget, which gave a decrease in the taxes.
For the last 3 years.
Last 3 years for the school. And we, the city, would bond.
Right.
So I don't know if you want to add a little
And the reason that that's the case is because you're a type 1 school, which means that all financial matters of a type 1 school come to 3 members of the governing body and 2 members of the school board, the 5 members of the Board of School Estimates. They make all the decisions on budgets and any other finances that are done. So this is a thing that you decide to do. Obviously, it's paid off immensely over the past 3 years, and it's going to continue to go in the future. So by putting the capital, you did an ordinance for $9.3 million the year that we switched from all the capital being in the school budget to doing an ordinance by the city, because it's a type 1 school. They get all the stuff that they need done, and we've been saving the taxpayers money for the past 3 years with bigger decreases each year as we've been going. And this will continue to go.
Are these the decreases you're saying here?
Yes.
The yearly change, 34,
yes.
89, 189.
Yeah, now we won't take all 261 because we need to drop a little bit down, but this was using, again, a $9 million maturity schedule. We're not going to borrow $9 million because we're going to be paying off some of the notes. It'll be less than that, so it's only going to get better. Remember, I show you the worst that can happen. Mm-hmm. It's going to get better than this.
Right, and every point off of the two is a help, the two-point rate.
Every
point lower than you saying the rates are coming in at one.
Oh, yeah. That's another thing.
So
we're selling the school next year. That's going to happen next year.
Okay.
For sure. So that'll be in the works. And then the city's the other debt will be in 23 and 25. So we had a sale in 19, 21, 23, and 25.
Okay.
And our rating went up, right, a year ago? Our bond rating went up, too, about a year ago, right?
Yeah, and you get rated for every issue. So we'll be rated again next year for the school portion. So that's the summary of it. It's still on track. It's still beneficial. You're getting capital stuff done that wasn't being done. You've taken on a ton of stuff since you've been in office, and no reason to stop. Mm-hmm. So whatever Al has for you, you're feel free to do an ordinance.
Buy him a drink after this? What is going on?
How much of that last bond ordinance did we use?
We're going to, when I do pass the ordinance, I'm going to reappropriate some of the old ordinances to it, which means we don't have to fund it again.
Right.
Actually, the $7 million that Minister already probably go down like $5 million.
Right.
So we spent almost, we were like $2 million short of what we had.
Right.
Well, because of the.
So the estimated versus actuals are going to be in our favor.
Right, yeah, yeah.
The thing with the firehouse number two repairs, we don't have that anymore, so if we still have $1 million left, we're going to reappropriate that to the.
Sure. Remember, you did 5 ordinances in one night to get the ball rolling on all the capital you need to do.
Right.
And typically, when you do an ordinance, you say, okay, what do you think we need for this? And you put that much and more, because no matter how much you put in the ordinance, it's not till you pay off the debt, does it cost you anything. So if you do an ordinance for $10 million and only spend 8, you're only going to pay off 8.
Right.
Yeah, so it's meaningless how much you put in there.
Right.
The only thing, if you cut them close and you run over a little bit, then you got to go back and do another ordinance to get the difference. So it's wise just to do them with more than you need, and then the breakage just take off and you never pay for it.
Right.
Great.
So it's good?
It's
good news.
Very good. Thank you.
Sounds good, right, Ernie?
Good seeing you guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Leon.
To see you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll continue. The following items are scheduled for action after our workshop. We will approve the minutes from August 27th, 2020 and September 10th, 2020. We have an ordinance introduction 2020-021, and this is amending Chapter 72 of the beaches. So I think this is something we need to get discussed, correct? This is our beach badges?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. So this ordinance will increase the beach badges from the preseason amount of $7 will go up to $10, and after May 31st, the seasonal badges will go from $15 to $20. Senior citizen badges will not be increased at all.
Right.
$7 were probably one of the lowest across the state of New Jersey, and the besides the maintenance of the beach, I'm sure everybody has seen minimum wages have gone up. So whether it's a beach badge checker or a seasonal help person that cleans the beach at 5 a.m., 6 a.m. while we're all sleeping, you know, wage as well as our lifeguards, they get a small increase every year. So along with salaries and other things, the cost has gone up, and the city of Ventnor is not a wealthy city. We need the revenue. So it will go up this year. Anybody? Commissioner Landgraf, Commissioner Kriebel, we're okay?
We discussed this with Margate, and they're...
I talked to Mayor Ricker today.
So have I.
So they're both in favor of doing it together.
Yep, we're doing it together. So it's still going to be Ventnor Margate badges. The fee will be the same whether you buy it here or there, obviously, if it's a dual-purpose badge. So, I toyed with, I know personally, it was something I knew we needed to do for the city. At the same time, I know people are out of work with COVID, so I struggled a little bit with it, but all in all, it's something we need to do. We need to be able to balance the budget, and we need to, and it's not to... It takes it off the taxpayers. So that extra revenue will, I think we calculated $100,000 additional revenue, which is a half a penny on our tax rate.
A half a penny.
So this was something that we actually have talked about this for 2 years with Margate, right? Or 3 years almost.
At least two.
Yeah. So, all right. So we're good with that?
Yeah. I mean, as you mentioned, it's something that even though that our taxpayers and our full-time residents do buy beach badges, we are a town that grows triples in size. And two-thirds of that revenue is going to come from people that are visiting and visiting Ventnor. And this is one way that we can take some of the burden off the taxpayer. And some of this revenue is going to go towards maintenance of the beach, but it's also the collective city revenue.
And it balances out the expense that we have to pay to keep the beaches.
We can't continue to fund the city on fees that are decades old with today's expense rates.
Exactly.
It's just not sustainable.
Exactly. Got to balance. And we sold our revenue in beach badges this past summer was the highest.
It's been the highest it's been in the last 4 years.
Yeah, because it has gone up every year and this year. It's gone up. Yeah, and it's probably, if we go back further, it's probably the highest it's been forever. But so this will only bring in more revenue. So right. I think this is a definite must that we need to do. So I can move on, gentlemen?
Yep.
Okay. The next is another ordinance introduction, 2020-022, and this is amending Chapter 143, Land Use Procedures, Article 1, Planning Board. So, Lance, you want to give us a little...
I want to hear the mayor explain this one.
No, this is your shtick. Give me numbers, so this is you.
Essentially, what we're doing is we're updating our submission requirements for this format of a meeting, where it's going to be both Zoom and it's a hybrid. We're the only town that I'm aware of that does meetings like this. They either do them live, which is kind of hard to do because you got to limit the number of people that can come, or you can do the hybrid, or you can do them all Zoom, which we've been doing. We've changed to this format for our commission meetings. We're getting a lot more people coming on the Zooms. It's easier. They can be at their home in Pennsylvania or outside of Ventnor somewhere, and they have a second home here. They can see what's going on in the town. I think we're going to stay with this for the foreseeable future.
Yeah.
I mean, I just think it's a great way to interact. So we're going to do the same thing with the planning board.
Yeah.
This effectuates that. It requires them to submit digital files that we can put up on our screens, that we can put up on the Zoom meeting,
right,
so people can see the plans and the application documents from home.
Right.
It's just an easier way to function in, you know, the 21st century.
You make a really good point, because people from out of town that also have summer homes don't know what's being built on their block, but with this digital format, they can chime in on the Zoom meeting at a planning board and see exactly what is being proposed at a house next door, and they're entitled to see what's, you know,
agreed,
and weigh in.
So that's what this will do. It creates a different checklist and more submission requirements.
Mm-hmm.
Either you submit it on a disk or a flash drive or whatever you have that we can upload to our website, and then you know, I'd love to get rid of all the paper we get.
Right.
You know, we get a stack as board members from that. Yeah. We get more than we get from this.
Absolutely.
We went mostly paperless here with our tablets.
Right.
I want to see us do that for planning board, too.
I agree.
It's expensive, and it's a waste of paper.
Yep.
The print's too small on the tablet for me. That's why I still look at my agenda.
You can make
paper.
It bigger.
I know.
I use the agenda because I got to check stuff
yeah,
off.
Yeah, that's what I do. Yeah. I check it off.
So that's what that ordinance is all about.
Thanks
the ordinance
for explaining
change.
That. I could have probably handled that one.
You probably could have.
As long as it doesn't talk about variances. Okay, the next part is we will have two public hearings and then we will adopt the ordinances. These are ordinances that were discussed at our last commission meeting, and the one is 2020-019, that's amending Chapter 220 of the Code of Ventnor, and this is our water usage rates are going up. Where's Ernie's out there? And he explained we needed to do this because of the old infrastructure and the cost. The enormous cost that it takes, costs
yeah,
every year.
The maintenance of our water system and this, the one next to it is right after it is the sewer.
Exactly.
The same thing.
Yep.
The sewer and water systems here are old. We've had a lot of breakages, you know, there for a while. Not this summer.
Oh, don't say that.
But last summer, every Friday, every holiday,
we
had a water main break, we had a sewer main break. So we are replacing a lot of the money you see going into these bonds.
Right.
Are replacing these systems, and you know, We had a stormwater pump.
It's on here.
It's on tonight. So for an emergency, we're paying for that. So we'd rather not have to do these in emergencies. We want to be proactive, replace our infrastructure, and that's good municipal planning when you do that down the road. So there's costs associated with it, and that's what these rates are there to. We haven't had a rate increase
in 5 years.
In five years, and we're still lower than Brigantine. We're still lower than Margate and still lower than Brigantine.
Yeah. And you know, one of the things that I mean, we were approached right before the election, the first election.
Oh, yeah.
By a water company that wanted to come in and buy our system. And it was, you know, all the glitz, and we'll pay you $40 million to run your sewer and water system. Sounds great. We don't control when they raise the rates.
Right.
They buy your system, we pay off all our debt, which is great, but then they can raise your water and sewer rates without even talking to us. They go to BPU. And they say, hey, we had to replace all this. We spent $40 million to repair all this.
Pumps and lines.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just like we're doing.
So we would rather have Ernie and Ed work with us and tell us what we need to do and maintain the system ourselves. You know, it was, when you look at it on the surface, it sounds great. They're going to come in and pay for all that and refurbish it all. But then the rates just go, look at all the towns with American Water and Aqua. Their rates are much higher than ours. So that's why we do have to incrementally bump them up, and that's what these two ordinances do.
So ultimately, that would be bad for the taxpayer.
Agreed.
Absolutely. Agreed. So the second ordinance, as Commissioner Landgraf just explained, 2020-020 will be our second public hearing and adoption, and that is for the sewer. One's for water usage, one's for the sewer. Okay. The next, we have resolutions that we will vote on by consent, and I'll go through them briefly. The first one is 2020-311, and this is authorizing the mayor of the City of Ventnor to execute a shared service agreement with Helena County Improvement Authority to provide certain project management and other services to the City of Ventnor. Do we have anything on that?
That allows them to come in and project manage and do inspections for us for our infrastructure projects. So.
Thanks.
Shared service.
What, Maria?
Shared service.
Shared services. Shared services. There's that catchword. Are you okay with that, Commissioner Kriebel?
Yes,
okay. Next will be Resolution 2020-312, and that is the State of New Jersey authorizing an emergency repair for drinking water well number 10, not to exceed $25,000.
Ernie, that's where we lost our pump?
We lost the motor on
the pump. Motor on the pump, on the well, yeah. So that's to replace the well, the motor that pulls the water up out of the ground and pumps it into our system. So.
Thank you. Commissioner Kriebel, you're good with that?
Yes.
Okay. The next is 2020-313, and this is a resolution authorizing the change order final for the reconstruction of Burke Avenue and Swarthmore Avenue driveways. Go with that?
Yeah.
Yep. This was a reduction, overall reduction of $40,000, I believe, $42,902 to $910. We didn't have to do some driveway connections to Shalom House and the synagogue.
Commissioner Kriebel?
Yes.
We're good? Okay. Next is Resolution 2020-314. It's authorizing the City of Ventnor to enter into an agreement with the Atlantic County along with various municipal users of the Atlantic County Radio Network. Maria, what is
dispatch?
Dispatch. Thank you. Commissioners, we're good?
Yeah, that one's good.
Okay. Next is Resolution 2020-315, and that is amending the Resolution 116 of 2019 awarding de Blasio and Associates for design and construction services for the Kingsley Drive Sanitary Sewer Project. I think that's self-explanatory, correct?
Yeah, it's taking money from that the contractor had to pay us for not finishing on time to help pay the inspection
for that because they had to be there.
Extended period of time that he had to be there. So.
Right. Okay, great.
Yeah.
Commissioner Kriebel, you'll go with that?
Yeah, Tim. That's Tim is just asking a question.
Tim McGuire's got a
question. Oh, McGuire.
I'm sorry to interrupt. That resolution was not about dispatch.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Because I asked that question, I want to make sure that's not about dispatch. I was told that was regarding the handheld radio.
The 800 megahertz radio network.
That's to continue with that.
Is that the county dispatch?
Is Doug still on here?
It says radio network.
It is, no, it says that is not the general, that is not our dispatch. That's
Atlanta
the county.
County radio network.
It's the county.
Wireless voice and data communications network.
Right, but when I read that contract, I specifically asked if that was the county-wide dispatch.
Hey, can I chime in on this one?
I can. Yeah, go ahead.
And your dog?
Just so you know, every 7 years, we have an agreement with the county. It just basically allows us to go in and utilize the system that the county has set up. All of the cities have this same connection. They have just revamped the system, so we're now all in the same game with the county mayor. So what they're doing is restarting up the agreement, shared services agreement, which we've always had, which we've always used.
Good.
But now that all of the city dispatches in the county are all on 800 megahertz, this agreement is going back in effect. And what it does is basically allows the city to use the county channels as well, and the county fire, county police, whenever we utilize them. It's just an agreement to allow us to go on utilizing the radio system collectively as groups of public safety. Thank you, guys.
And based on the backup, Chief, this is going, this goes back to 2004.
Yeah, it does. Because everybody, they had to ask me, because everybody's system was in transition to don't get any more veterans. Everybody now is, so they're starting up the agreement again, so that we all can join in and share.
It's not 911 dispatch, but dispatch.
No.
Yeah, it's not dispatch, it's the radio.
It's right, dispatch relay.
All right, good.
And basically, it's just the use of radio channels, utilizing the county as a central dispatch. Basically, the county has the hardware and the towers, and we utilize those towers as well. We utilize repeaters to get out to their towers and stuff. But that's really all it is. Now the county has transitioned to 800 megahertz, and every municipality and county is also that way. They are reinstituting the shared services agreement with the county.
You Thanks, okay? Chief.
You okay with that, Tim?
Yes.
No, Tim McGuire?
Me too.
Tim too?
Yes, I'm still not sure I understand, but that's fine. In other words,
we've always utilized a shared agreement. We've always utilized county channels. There was a period of time where other municipalities were catching up, like Vetner and other cities, catching up to the county, which had 800 megahertz. We were all now on the same system, utilizing the same type of portables and radios from the same frequency. So the county is reinstituting basically the policy on shared services. That agreement allows us to go back and utilize their services.
Okay.
We've always been utilizing.
But the dispatchers will still be our dispatchers?
Oh yeah, nothing to do with that. Basically because we are utilizing county channels. County frequencies.
Okay.
Okay, every town now has 800 megahertz capabilities. So with that, we are now utilizing the county setup and focusing all of our radio transmissions through the county utilizing 800 megahertz.
That comes into dispatch.
We're all going to the county and everybody's going to be changed today. We're dispatching from the county. That's the total difference of it.
Let's go. All right, we're good.
We're good. Okay, the next is resolution 2020-316, and that's a resolution authorizing an emergency repair for well number 8, not exceeding $15,000.
We actually have an exact amount now. We got bids from AC Schultes and a couple others, and the price is going to be $15,220.
Okay.
This is a stormwater pump, not a well pump.
Okay.
But it's at well number 8 to Titus Field.
Thank you. Commissioner Kriebel, we're good?
Yes, thank you.
Next is resolution 2020-317, and this is authorizing an enforcement for no parking within the city of Ventnor from October 1st, 2020 through December 31st, 2020. Is this just an open end, or is this specific to an area?
It's something that we can do every quarter.
We do. I gotcha.
Having to do it for every event.
If there's something going on.
Not, so we're frequently doing.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
So it's an open-ended resolution, so
correct.
We don't have to do one
correct.
Prior to anything happening.
Save us a
for 90 days.
For 90 days.
For 90 days.
Legally, you can only do 90 days. Are we on 17, 317?
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, so it's October to December. Okay. Do we do that all through the year, too?
You would do them individually?
Yeah, I mean, every quarter we should probably, right?
This will allow us to do it every quarter.
This will allow us to do it once every quarter rather than
individually. Yeah, and instead every time.
All the,
exactly.
Luckily, we have a lot of events, and we did anyway. Before.
Right. Not this year, we don't.
This year.
But that's okay. We usually don't.
It'll come back.
Absolutely. Okay, the next resolution is...
What?
Anytime. Right.
Yeah, it's anytime the street needs to be shut down for parking.
Thank you. Right. So, more expeditious.
Thank you. Next is resolution 2020-318, and this is a resolution of supporting the state of New Jersey, supporting the Knockout Opiate Abuse Day being October 6th. We've done this.
Do it every year.
Every year. We're good with that?
Yes.
Okay. The next is resolution 2020-319, and this is a resolution authorizing the disposal of surplus property. And it's minor stuff, right, Al?
Yeah, it's just the leftover equipment and things like that that we can't utilize anymore. We get some money back for it.
Right. Okay. Great. Thank you. You okay with that, Commissioner?
Yes.
Okay. Next is Resolution 2020-320, and this is authorizing discharge and of a satisfied mortgage for a property known as 9 North Washington Avenue. Al, this is that program?
When